Welcome to Parents' Perspective.
No, he doesn't,
5-year-old Davy insisted to his friend Ben. Sammy doesn't have two mommies. He has a mommy and a daddy.
Does too,
Ben replied just as firmly. I saw them. He called them both mommy. So there.
Does not, retorted Davy. Everybody knows you have a mommy and a daddy.
Well, he doesn't, proclaimed Ben. He only has mommies.
Then who's the daddy? Exclaimed Davy. There has to be a daddy somewhere. Where did they put him?
I don't know, shrugged Ben. Maybe they just rent one when they need one.
From a parent's perspective, how can we better support families headed by gay and lesbian family members? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert by experience. Micah Saub is an attorney who has been both professionally and personally involved with parenting issues and some of the issues of gay and lesbian parenting. He's the father of a 21-month-old daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Micah.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
What's the biggest challenge facing gay and lesbian parents?
Good question. I think the biggest challenge is exactly the same challenge that every parent has. Ultimately, we're all getting up in the morning when the baby is crying. We're all struggling with dealing with daycare and dealing with school issues and educating our kids. It's interesting. If you had asked me the question before I had a child, I would give you a very political response. But after my daughter was born, things are very different. And my answer is different. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't special challenges that gay and lesbian parents have. I suppose I would say the second biggest challenge is constantly coming out to people. Most people who are gay and lesbian make choices about who they're going to tell. For a lot of gay and lesbian parents, it's not a big secret. And I think it's fair to say that most gay and lesbian parents are known to be gay and lesbian by all of their friends and family and coworkers, many of their coworkers. But when you have a child, you're constantly coming in contact with new people. And it happens so often that everybody assumes, and not unreasonably, it makes sense to make this assumption, that my daughter has a mom and a dad. So, for example, we were flying on an airplane. I've got my daughter in one arm. I've got my bags in another and a million other things behind me that I don't know how I'm going to carry. And I'm struggling. I get on the airplane and the flight attendant says, oh, what a beautiful baby. Of course, my daughter is beautiful. Everybody says that. And she says, so where's mommy? By this point, my temper was maybe a little frayed. And I said, she doesn't have a mommy. She has a daddy who's already home. I didn't say it quite as mean as maybe I sound right now, but that's how I was feeling inside, not because of her comment, but just, I think, because of the circumstances. And she sort of froze with a big smile on her face for literally 5 seconds. And she said, oh, that's great. And I think that with a little bit of time, it probably was great in her mind. But at that moment, I don't think she felt like it was great. I think she was uncomfortable. And that's okay.
Speaking about uncomfortable, how do these children do socially among their peers? Obviously, the grown-ups have to have times, as you describe, where you have to keep explaining and explaining. What happens with the kids?
When children are young, absolutely nothing. When they're teeny, there's no issue. They don't recognize gender. But there does come a time when children start realizing that there's a difference between boys and girls, and then they start realizing that they have parents. And I have heard from parent after parent who have children who are older that this issue of having two parents who are the same gender does pop up, and, you know, it turns into a question. I think that it's something that most gay and lesbian parents will talk to their kids about, and it doesn't turn into an issue for the kids. Now, that said, we all know that by the time the kids are in junior high or high school, it may well be a significant issue. And I was talking with one mom fairly recently who has 2 children, an older boy and a younger boy. And the older boy really had difficulty. He struggled with it. He kept it a secret. The younger boy was pretty open about it from the start, but the older boy had trouble with it until toward the end of his high school career, at which point he became fairly, not vocal about it, but much more comfortable. There's an organization called Collage, Children of Lesbian and Gay Parents. Collage is a great resource because it's a place where kids who have gay and lesbian parents can get together, and it helps them talk with each other in a way that talking to your mom or your dad just won't do. And so I think what we've seen from older children of gay and lesbian parents, meaning children who are in their 20s and beyond, that having gay or lesbian parents has no impact on how adjusted the kids are or how happy the kids are. But as suggested by your question, it is something that kids have to deal with as they grow up.
There's lots of insensitivity that I would imagine is not always intentional.
I think there is. I think there is. The fact is that most people are heterosexual, and most parents are heterosexual. And so when somebody says to me some comment about assuming that Hannah has a mom, it doesn't bother me. It is certainly the sort of statement that could bother somebody.
How about society's expectations, Micah? How do gay and lesbian parents deal with those?
Well, that is a very, very big question, Linda. It's a big question because it goes well beyond parenting. When you've got two men living together or two women living together, they have a household. And there's an enormous set of responsibilities, from earning some money to feed everybody to cleaning the floors. And those responsibilities have to be divvied up. I was an undergrad at the University of Connecticut, and I had a professor who wrote a lot about gender issues. Brilliant and funny woman. One thing that I felt like she always left out as an example of how families can be formed in a way that's fair to both parents is to look at how gay and lesbian parents are divvying up responsibilities. So we find ways, and it's true that sometimes one of the guys has more responsibility taking care of the home, and one of the guys has more responsibility outside of the home. And of course, those are very closely tied to gender issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that probably extends to parenting issues as well. I think sometimes one parent might be more nurturing, the other might be a little more educational. I don't know that notions of being male or female play a significant role for gay and lesbian parents as parents, though it's certainly a significant issue for gay and lesbian couples.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about gay and lesbian parents.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Micah Saub about gay and lesbian parents. What accommodations do gay and lesbian parents have to make for kids of genders different than their own? In a heterosexual family, if you have a mother and a father, then whatever gender kid you have, there's somebody there that's that gender. How does it work for fathers raising daughters, in your case, or mothers raising sons?
Unless your child is shut up in a closet all day, God forbid, your child is going to have lots of men and women around them. In our case, our daughter has lots of female caregivers. She's got lots of female aunties with a lowercase a, right? And of course, she has her aunt who dotes on her. So that I'm not sure that you need to make any special accommodations, speaking generally. I do think, however, that it's important to make sure that your child has role models of his or her own gender. I think it can be different growing up as a little girl or a little boy, and your parents may not quite understand that. Now, one couple who were considering having a child, two men, were worried, well, what if we get a girl? We don't know what to do. We don't know how to take care of her. And I said, you know, there's really not much you have to worry about. The one instruction I gave is when you change her diaper, you wipe from front to back. That's about all you need to know.
That's important to know.
Of course, at about age 13 or so, there may be some extra things you need to know.
Well, you're quite right. And I think that puberty and beyond, it's important to make sure that, in my case, that my daughter knows that there are women she can go to when she has questions. Either she doesn't want to talk to us because we're her parents or because we just won't get it. And in our case, that's certainly, we've got plenty of role models. As I said, it is important to have role models and people you're comfortable going to for that sort of intimate advice. And that's something that you don't set up at puberty. You set that up well in advance. And hopefully you have friends who are female and male so that the kid grows up with lots of people around them.
Children do grow up with social issues all around them, and daycare, for example. I have a 2.5-year-old granddaughter whose mother was initially into no pink, no ruffles, just let's buy her plaid and yellow and green and blue and so forth and red, and except, of course, almost all her baby gifts were pink. She doesn't watch any television or videos in their home. Well, she learned all about the Disney princesses in daycare. She learned the names of all the princesses. She started to ask for princess things. She wanted little sparkly heels. She wears bows in her hair because she has a lot of hair. We have to keep it out of her face. Sparkly bows and butterfly bows and all kinds of things that her mother doesn't do. Her mother's quite feminine in her own way, but her identity as a little girl is coming a lot from playing with lots of other little girls who do know about things she hasn't been exposed to. So I think you're quite right. I think it comes from all around.
And the story that you told, Sandy, at the beginning of our session about Ben and Davy is a really good example of that, because eventually the kids are going to be talking to each other about what is possible and what isn't possible. And of course, kids think that they're right all the time, but they're not. And it is an issue that has to be addressed, that you have to talk about with your kids. And that's certainly true with everything from wearing ruffles to gender roles.
It's ironic, even today, in so many instances, gay and lesbian families have trouble being fully accepted by the extended family. And in situations like this, it seems like the extended family has even a more supportive role to play in terms of gender identity and all the other things that extended family are so good for.
There are a lot of roles that are exemplary among family members, not even noticeable or conscious necessarily, but all the women in the family are setting examples for the little girl who's being raised by two daddies without giving it a whole lot of thought. They can be made to feel that that's a very important part of their relationship with this family.
In our family, for example, there are lots of male role models, but one of my sons really has used his grandfather as a true role model. So you just never know where the role models are going to come from. And it's a wonderful thing that the extended family in this kind of situation really is needed to step in. It's a very supportive, very important role, it sounds like. How do gay and lesbian parents help their children deal with social prejudice? This, I'm sure, is the same boat as a whole lot of ethnic groups, a whole lot of religious groups, but, you know, it's out there to deal with.
I think being a role model for your own behavior is probably the most important thing. I have a neighbor with whom we were fairly close. We enjoyed talking with them. We had a nice relationship. They are fairly conservative, and that was always a source of pleasure for all of us. It was something we talked about. You know, it was an interesting issue for us to talk about, and we had a good relationship. One day I was walking down the street, and they were getting out of their car, and they said, "Hey, what's new?" I said, "We're going to have a baby." We were so excited. This was when we had learned about our upcoming adoption. And the wife looked at me, and she said, "Which one of you is pregnant?"
Oh my dear.
Now, if it were said in a joking way, that would be one thing. It wasn't.
Oh, no.
And I looked at her for a moment, and I didn't know what to say. Her husband changed the subject, asked about our new handrail in our house. I later saw her. This is a couple of months later. She was gardening. I asked her, you know, when I told you about Hannah's upcoming birth, you made a comment. And some people have difficulty with the notion of gay families having children. And I wonder if that's what the issue was. She didn't respond. She literally continued to kneel there, 3 feet away from me, gardening. And she just sort of stared steadfastly at the brown earth. I was flabbergasted. I tried to talk with her a little bit more, and it just didn't go anywhere. She just wouldn't respond. Interestingly, she later had a child. And I was so happy, but I had these really conflicting feelings. Her child was, I believe, adopted. And I had these really conflicting feelings because I wanted to share their joy, but I was so unhappy about her reaction. But it seems to me that I can be the best parent to my daughter, not by reacting with anger if something like that happens, especially in my daughter's presence, but to try to be patient, understand that we're all at a different place of understanding, to try to help people along if they want to come along, and to let everybody live with their own set of beliefs, which everybody's entitled to.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about gay and lesbian parents.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Micah Salb about gay and lesbian parents. I think there's a lot of room here for education among people who are in that heterosexual community that are kind of ignorant, in many cases just naive. And we need to know, we need to do shows like this, we need to talk with people like you and others, and that's how we learn, and that's how we grow, and that's how we know how to handle circumstances that might be surprises.
That's right.
To us.
For example, daycares. If a daycare has a child with gay or lesbian parents, it's important that the caregivers don't always assume that all the kids have a mommy and a daddy. Now, of course, this goes well beyond gay and lesbian parenting. I mean, there are lots of single moms and single dads, and there are lots of extended families or aunts taking care of children. But when the daycare worker constantly says, you know, go home and tell mommy and daddy such and such, it can be a little confusing for these little ones.
It's interesting how things change. When we were raising our boys 25, 30, 35 years ago, it wasn't so obvious that there were lots of different kinds of ways to have families. And when our fourth one came along, he was on a soccer team. He was about 10 or 11 years old, and he was on a soccer team where there was a very capable player who was particularly macho, and it turns out he was raised by two mothers, and that was 11 or so years ago, and that was still pretty unusual.
Even in today's world, of course, we all know of single parents. Most of the time, for Sandy and me, a single parent has meant somebody who's divorced or widowed, has come to have a child alone in some other way. But today you see single parents who make the choice to become a parent without a partner. I have a friend whose daughter is in her late 30s, and she decided she wants to be a mom. And so through the help of a sperm bank, she did become a mom, recently giving birth to a beautiful little baby girl. She's a single parent with a little girl, an option we never would have seen when my grown-up men sons were little children.
And we have a cousin in our family who decided also that she, as a single person, wanted to be a mother. And she did an international adoption, which was a very big deal at the time. She did it about 18 years ago. But that's another option that's going on. In addition, we hear a lot of studies now that tell that many, many, many families are headed by grandparents, where there are no parents involved for whatever reason, and a child is raised by one grandmother or two grandparents. So there are many different permutations and combinations and options available today that really weren't in so much evidence years ago.
How can gay and lesbian parents most effectively be advocates for their own families?
Easy. Be out, open, and comfortable with who you are. Share your own comfort with other people. I don't think that gay and lesbian parents or single parents or parents who are different from the broader community in any way, race or gender or age or any other factor, should force other people to accept them. Because other people will or won't. It's up to them. But the best way for that to happen, I think, in this setting, is learn to be comfortable with yourself and express that. I think that will help people who want to be happy and comfortable and supportive to do so.
We haven't talked, but I do want to just bring up how gay and lesbian families do become parents. But I know that you are involved in a program here in Washington that helps with that. And I just wondered if you'd talk briefly on that.
Sure. There's a program run by the Whitman Walker Clinic, which is a longstanding community health clinic serving gay men and lesbians in the Washington area called Maybe Baby. This program has been running for many, many years. It's for people who are gay or lesbian who are considering having children to learn both how do you make it happen? I mean, it's not so easy when you're a gay male couple to have a child. And also to address the same sorts of questions that we've been talking about today. It's a great program. I know they have a similar program in Boston run by the Fenwick Community Clinic, and there may be other programs. And if there aren't other programs, especially in cities like San Francisco and Los Angeles and St. Louis and Chicago and Atlanta and overseas, there should be. The Whitman Walker's program has been running for so long, it can be a great resource for other places considering setting up their own program. Programs like that can be a great resource for gay and lesbian families.
Now, speaking of resources, our listeners who'd like to further pursue some of these issues, I'm sure would be delighted to have whatever resources you can suggest.
There are a few really terrific resources. One is called Rainbow Families. You can find it easily on the web. In fact, I think their website is www.rainbowfamilies.org. Rainbow Families, of course, is an organization that advocates for and addresses the needs of gay and lesbian parents. The Human Rights Campaign, which is a political organization addressing political change for gay and lesbian people, has a family project with an enormous amount of resources on their website. And so they're a great resource. Those are two really terrific resources. Maybe the best resource is other gay and lesbian families. And to the extent that you live in a community where there are other gay and lesbian families, banding together, talking, learning from one another is a great idea.
Does Whitman Walker have a website?
Sure. www.wwc.org for Whitman Walker Clinic.
Okay. Well, this has been a wonderful opening of a lot of interesting information for a lot of people. So, Micah South, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a real pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 328 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Colin Fotia. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.